everyone. Thank you so much for tuning into Advertising Week's Great Minds, People and Culture podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Kinsey, Executive Vice President of Advertising Week and Emerald. Today, we're thrilled to have Ben Cicchetti with us. Ben is the Vice President of Corporate Marketing at InfoSum, where he has been a key player since early 2018, leading their global marketing strategy. Ben is a passionate advocate for LGBTQ community. He chairs InfoSum's LGBTQ network, promoting an inclusive and supportive work environment. According to a study by McKinsey & Company, only 31% of LGBTQ employees feel a sense of belonging at work. I'm excited to have Ben on today's podcast as we explore ways in which we can support the LGBTQ community in the workplace. Hi, Ben. Welcome. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Thank you so much. Ben, you are an advocate for LGBTQ plus community. Why is this important to you?
Yeah, so for me, the reason I choose to be so visible is kind of the old phrase is you can't be what you can't see, right? And when I was coming up in my career as a gay cis man, there wasn't a single person in a more senior position to me that was openly gay or even a member of the LGBTQ plus community that could kind of show to me that it's possible to be both openly gay and have a successful career. So as I grew in my career, another phrase that I love is be the person you needed when you were younger. So as I advanced in my career, I wanted to use my position and my visibility to show those earlier in their careers that you can be both successfully professionally, but also live your true authentic self every day, even at work. So it's just something that's always been ingrained in me as I've grown in my positions.
That's great. So how have you, despite having any mentors to look up to, how have you grown your career regardless of having that LGBTQ representation on the top?
Yeah, so I think I've focused on, you know, as everyone should and everyone does, right? I focused on myself and doing the very best that I could in my particular position in my profession as a marketer. And then I think as I've got more senior in roles, you get I felt a sense of security and a sense of control that I could choose to be very openly, visibly, I don't really like the phrase openly gay, very visibly gay, to ensure that, you know, others around me and at InfoSum and outside of InfoSum could see that, you know, that I was able to do so. And if I'm able to do so, hopefully they would feel confident and able to do it themselves. So for me, it was always about, and it always continues to be about, focusing on doing the very best I can professionally. And then that unlocks a certain level of privilege to then be a visible LGBTQ plus leader.
This community is obviously underserved year round, but it's only during Pride Month that I feel like most companies pay attention to and celebrate what it means to be in the LGBTQ community. In your opinion, in what ways can organizations maintain a year-round focus on the LGBTQ issues outside of it being peaked during Pride Month?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's super important. So I think first and foremost, it's also important to recognize that Pride is actually incredibly important. Like, it's an incredibly important moment every year. It's an opportunity for LGBTQ plus people to celebrate, to protest. It's an opportunity to shine a light on LGBTQ plus people and the challenges many of us face. But to your point, Pride is just 1 month a year. And it's important that companies do focus on LGBTQ plus people and LGBTQ plus stories all year round, and not just, you know, when it's somewhat convenient and somewhat a trend to do so, right? If we, you know, if we second park the kind of backlash that we did see in 2023 to certain campaigns, supporting the LGBTQ plus community during Pride is somewhat convenient and it's somewhat a commercial opportunity. But supporting the LGBTQ plus community when it's less convenient, when it's not part of a trend, that to me is when you're truly demonstrating allyship. So the way I look at Pride, it's incredibly important, but I also kind of see it as a barometer for where we're at with representation and equality. So when we look at Pride 2023, which I mentioned, we saw that a lot of the headlines were focused on backlash to certain campaigns, which, you know, I truly have to believe in my core was a small vocal minority, but that's where a lot of the focus went. So when we look at ways that organizations can maintain or grow a year-round focus, it's about making sure that when we get around to Pride 2024, we're in a better place than we were last year. So organizations can do a lot of things. I'm sure we're going to touch on a bunch of these. But, you know, organizations can look internally, look at their internal organization, form employee resource group, invest in LGBTQ plus equality training, invest in their LGBTQ plus employees. But, you know, we're on a podcast hosted by Advertising Week. So it's also important to focus on the role of advertisers and media companies. And that, to me, comes down to the representation and stories they tell in their advertising, but also the content that advertising is associated with all year round. And we are starting to see more of that. We're seeing more and more incredible brands and media companies telling inclusive LGBTQ plus stories throughout the year. And so we just need to see more of that. And I guess the word I would use for it is consistency. Consistency all year round, not just at Pride.
I love that. And I think it's important for us to highlight the fact that it's not the responsibility of someone who is part of that community in a leadership position to actually advance the LGBTQ programs in the company, that it's the responsibility of everybody to be an ally. And this is no different than any other underserved group that we tend to put a focus on through a D&I lens. Do you agree?
So, I mean, I'm a visible gay leader 365 days of the year, and I try to ensure that that comes through in everything I do, whether that's hosting our employee resources group or doing things like this podcast or representing InfoSum at events. And events is actually an area I'm really passionate about. As I said, we've hosted an LGBTQ plus event last September, but you know, our industry has a different event almost every week. But how often do we see LGBTQ plus representation on stage or as a focused area of discussion? We've had thousands of panels focused on the cookieless future, right? Which is incredibly important and it's an important topic for our industry. But I'd love to see more panels focused on LGBTQ plus representation, especially at some of the more pivotal events like Advertising Week, like Demexico, like Possible, ANA, Cannes. And in addition to the specific content, I would just love to see more LGBTQ plus speakers given that spotlight so that young LGBTQ plus people in that audience can see that you can be successful and successful LGBTQ plus people on stage at those big events.
And in your opinion, how can a combination of authenticity, diverse leadership, and involvement of the LGBT community prevent missteps and ensure organizations don't back down from campaigns?
Yeah, I mean, those three factors, I think, to me, are kind of the perfect combination, if there could be one, to avoid those mistakes and those missteps. So if we look at them individually, you know, authenticity to me means that supporting the LGBTQ plus community is part of the DNA of your organization. It's directly reflected in the brand values, for example, that you set at a corporate level. And then diverse leadership team, you know, or diverse leadership in general means that you have people from all different backgrounds and experiences shaping your business decisions. And then the last part, which is particularly important, obviously, for the LGBTQ plus focus is involving LGBTQ plus people in your campaigns. It sounds really obvious when you say it, but if you're planning an LGBTQ plus focused campaign and it's focused on the LGBTQ plus community, you should probably involve some LGBTQ plus people in planning that campaign, be that people on your creative teams and in your agencies or, you know, in employee resources groups, sharing your creative plans with your EIG to gather feedback and ensure that, you know, you have authentic representation, that the stories in your campaign are authentic and therefore you're more likely to avoid tokenistic campaigns or other missteps that we see sometimes happen. So when supporting the LGBTQ plus community is part of your DNA, and when you have LGBTQ plus people involved in the decision making, and when you have LGBTQ plus people involved in the creative, I think it's much more likely that you'll either make a misstep in your campaign or that you might cave to some of the immediate backlash that we saw in 2023, because you'll feel a deeper connection to the campaign and the content, and therefore you are much more likely to stand by it.
Absolutely. So for your company, tell us a little about your company and what you all do. Do you tend to have focus groups when these campaigns require for someone in an underrepresented group, LGBTQ plus? Do you have them in your focus groups to review the content or participate in the content? What does your process look like as it relates to campaigning?
Yeah, I mean, so we, because InfoSum is a data collaboration technology, so we enable companies to maximize the impact of their advertising and maximize the performance of their advertising using their data and collaborate with other parties. So we don't really get involved in the creative aspect, and therefore we don't necessarily get involved in the creative plans around, for example, LGBTQ plus campaigns. But we do have, you know, we have an InfoSum ERG, which I'm sure we'll touch on a little bit later on. So we have groups within our organization that are there to play other roles in our internal diversity and inclusion and building a workplace that is truly diverse and inclusive.
And this is a very simple tactical question. You know, in the US, when we onboard employees, it's the EEOC requirement that we ask for gender and national origin, but that's it. Do you recommend that companies capture sexual orientation as part of their onboarding so that we do have the opportunity to identify who these underrepresented people are amongst our communities?
I mean, I think it's a question you could ask during onboarding. Obviously, you have to respect people's privacy, right? And some people either may not feel comfortable or may not be in a position in their own kind of personal journey yet to disclose that at a corporate level. But I think if you make it an option for people to disclose that during their kind of onboarding process and make it very clear that it is a optional field or option piece of data to provide, I think it is important to understand the makeup of your organization from all different lenses of diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's incredibly important to understand how you are represented within your organization as a whole. So I think it's an important data point to collect. You just have to be very sensitive to it, and you have to respect people's privacy and their own place in their individual journey.
Ben, you touched on this very briefly, the media's role as an industry and how it impacts the way that we support our LGBTQ communities. Why is media's role as an industry crucial in leading with equal rights? And how can it contribute to diversity and inclusivity through ad sales and representation?
Yeah, I mean, representation is incredibly important. And I think we'll probably cover it a lot as we kind of go through this podcast. So from part of what you were saying there was around kind of the ad sales perspective, which I actually think is super important, something that we probably don't focus on enough. If we look at one of the reasons the advertising and media industry exists, it's partly to fund that free and open press, right? But right now we have a very polarized media landscape, to say the least. So it's critical that part of that landscape is minority-owned and operated and focused publications. So I think it's vital that brands are putting a percentage of their ad dollars towards those types of publications. It ensures that those publications can continue to exist, and it ensures that they can tell, you know, important LGBTQ plus stories from the perspective of LGBTQ plus people and from LGBTQ plus people. So it's incredibly important that we continue to fund those sorts of publications. But then outside of those very specific outlets, it's also important that the more mainstream media outlets have a strong LGBTQ plus representation within the organization and a representation that's telling our stories. So last September in 2023, InfoSum hosted our own LGBTQ plus event, which was fantastic. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Ben Hunt, and he was the BBC's first LGBTQ plus correspondent. And he's now Vice News' global LGBTQ plus correspondent. And the work he does is an example of why it's so incredibly important. You know, telling stories that otherwise might not break through to that mainstream media. And the only way that we can continue to do that is if brands are putting their ad dollars towards those outlets and alongside that sort of LGBTQ plus content.
We talked about employee resources groups a little bit too. In what manner do you think can ERGs be an organizational initial step towards promoting equitable rights and obviously educating allies?
I love ERGs. I think they're an incredibly important resource. But if we go back to a topic which we touched on right at the start, which was authenticity, I don't think you can authentically support the LGBTQ plus community externally unless you're doing it internally first. And an employee resource group, an ERG, is a really important first step to get your internal house in order and to focus on an internal perspective. So I've worked in workplaces where I was the only openly gay LGBTQ plus employee. And it's incredibly isolating to be, you know, the one. An employee resource group is just a fantastic way to provide a safe space for LGBTQ plus people to come together, to share their workplace experience, be around other people who have a similar lived experience. But just as importantly, and you touched on it during the question, is and we see this a lot at the InfoSum ERG, is it's a really fantastic way to bring allies into the equation and to educate allies on the struggles and the joys of being LGBTQ+, so that they can better empathize with their LGBTQ+ colleagues, but also the LGBTQ+ people they meet in their everyday life, right? So whether that's a better understanding of why pronoun use is so important, or a better understanding of the lived experience of trans people, it's all incredibly important. So creating that employee resource group provides a centralized way to share that education and that experience. And then it's also a group, which we obviously touched on the fact that, you know, you can use ERGs to review creative plans, but it's also a group that can review your company's processes and your policies and your procedures to ensure that you are truly creating that kind of inclusive working environment. And therefore, it just kind of generally contributes to creating that inclusive working environment. And I think one thing I said there, which I actually wanted to come back to, was I think it's important that you focus on both the challenges, which are obviously incredibly important and something that comes up a lot, obviously, in our ERG and in other ERGs. But we should also focus on the joys of being a part of the LGBTQ plus community, right? It's an incredibly joyous thing to be part of our community. So I think it's really important that if you have an ERG, that you are also focused on the much more positive stories and the positive light that, you know, being a part of the LGBTQ plus community has.
You mentioned the ERG groups at your company. How big are they? Because I think it actually prevents people to start them because of the size of their organization. They don't think that a lot of people will attend. What would your advice be for those people who still have not activated ERG groups because of the fact that they might be a smaller organization and they don't think that enough people will be interested in the little subgroups?
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic point. And obviously there is a critical mass that you kind of get to where it makes sense to have kind of break off ERGs, right? So at InfoSum, we have the Women of InfoSum network, which are focused on our female employees. And then we have our LGBTQ plus network. But I think for smaller businesses that might be struggling with the idea of, you know, especially going back to your point around, we don't necessarily always know the makeup of our organizations and how much LGBTQ plus representation we have within our organization. I think what you can look to do is have an ERG network that then tackles multiple issues, right? If you're not of the size yet where you can have a specific group focused on the different parts or the different areas that you might focus an ERG on, you can have a single ERG that focuses on, has sessions specifically on LGBTQ plus history and rights and challenges, and have a specific ERG focused on Black history and Black History Month, and then on Women's History and Women's History Month. So you can have these ERGs that take on different shapes and different sizes depending on the topic that you're looking to tackle. And then as those topics become more and more pertinent within your organization and you have greater and greater representation as you grow, then you can kind of, you know, create little splinters off of that ERG and create a specific LGBTQ plus ERG or create a specific women's network within your organization.
I love that approach. So you're saying it's okay to have a broader group where people of underserved groups are all part of the conversation, and then hopefully that will then branch out to other subgroups that will be larger in scale.
Yeah, I think so. Because I think to your point, there's a lot of smaller businesses that want to be able to focus on these things. And obviously, I'm not, you know, sitting here claiming to be an ERG expert or a HR expert or a people expert. But, you know, where you can create those groups, I think it just creates a really positive environment within your organization. It shows that you're taking the time to focus on these things, even if you're not at the point or the critical mass yet where you can focus very specifically on one. I think it's a really nice way to start on that journey, if you like.
I think that's a great approach. Thanks for sharing that. Outside of the employee resource groups, what other strategies can organizations implement to ensure that their support for LGBTQ plus rights is not just symbolic, but leads to meaningful, tangible change, which would include people being seen and included in the organization?
Yeah, I mean, I think corporations have, you know, phenomenal power to shape not only obviously their internal organization, but also to shape society as a whole. So, you know, I work at InfoSum, we're a data collaboration technology, and therefore we're heavily focused on data privacy. And in recent years, what we've seen is Apple has made data privacy an integral part of their marketing strategy. And now consumers are more aware than ever how their data is being used, collected by tech vendors. So if you imagine those same sorts of companies using that power to raise awareness of all parts of the LGBTQ plus community and the workplace experience, you know, we've touched on a lot. It means, you know, looking at your internal organization and how you're creating an inclusive workplace, reviewing your processes and procedures. How are you promoting pronoun usage? Do you have gender neutral bathrooms? Is your, you know, is your parental leave inclusive? Does your healthcare cover transition related care? Imagine a world where those all just kind of became the default position for these large corporations. That would quickly trickle into general society, and you'll see less of what I would kind of call these clickbaity headlines around, you know, the introduction of a gender neutral bathroom or the use of pronouns on name badges. So they have a real power to shape that. And I think the other thing that corporations need to do is, you know, take a look at their leadership. You know, it's really important that we're regularly reviewing and assessing representation within your company as a whole, but also very specifically within your leadership team. And if you have poor representation, look at your workplace and determine what is it about our workplace that isn't attracting diverse candidates, and then try and fix that. Because it's not just, you know, we talk about a lot about the, you know, the moral implications of having a diverse workplace. But I think it was McKinsey did a study a few years ago and found that the businesses or businesses with diverse leadership teams were 25% more likely to have above average profitability. So it's not just about what I would consider the most important thing, which is the morally positive thing of having diverse businesses and diverse leadership teams and having diverse employee bases. It's simply better for business. So I think all organizations should be focused on how do we ensure we have good representation at every level of our business.
I love that. And I think you shared some things that most HR teams could do fairly quickly, which is the use of pronouns and, of course, looking at your benefits to make sure they're inclusive. And transitioning benefits is something that is not heavily utilized, but when it is utilized, it's something that is so meaningful to the person who's using it. So those are two great tips. Thank you for sharing those. And how about on the leadership side? How can they actively engage as allies to support the LGBT community, whether that is in the workplace or beyond workplace? Like, how could they lead by example?
Yeah, so I like to talk about three things or three actions, which is show up, speak up, and level up. So, you know, show up means showing up for your LGBTQ plus teammates, you know, attending those internal events that we've touched on, focused on the LGBTQ plus community, educate yourself on the challenges that we face within the workplace, and therefore how you as a leader can better support the LGBTQ plus community. Then speak up for your LGBTQ plus colleagues and teammates. You know, it's an unfortunate fact that LGBTQ plus people are still very much, you know, often the minority within most workplaces. And unfortunately, we still face, you know, casual and overt homophobia, biphobia, transphobia, often, you know, disguised as banter is the phrase we would use here in the UK, but it's not banter. It is homophobia, biphobia, and transphobia. And when you're the target of those sorts of attacks, it can be an incredibly difficult thing to speak up against it. So banter is when you kind of disguise a what would be considered a homophobic phrase or a homophobic joke as a joke when it's not a joke, right? It's demeaning and it's, you know, it's a negative connotation. You're playing off stereotypes about kind of, you know, about gay people or LGBTQ plus people.
It's micro and macro aggressions.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, so if you hear about it, if you see something like that happening, speak up on behalf of your colleagues and do it on their behalf when it can be incredibly difficult to do yourself. And then the last thing I would say is, and the last of my kind of three areas I focus on is level up, which is level up your LGBTQ plus colleagues, elevate their voices, actively promote and amplify their perspectives and experiences and contributions, both your organization and outside your organization. So I always focus on those three things: show up, speak up, and level up.
And any advice for those who might be scared to be an ally to this topic because they're not part of the community? Because I feel like when we do our DNA initiatives, most of the time, people who do not identify with an underrepresented group are always too scared to be part of it or talk about it simply because they don't want to say the wrong thing or offend people. What's your advice for those allies that in the majority that are too afraid to speak up or say anything about the topic simply because they just feel like they don't know enough about it.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Look, I just encourage everyone to get involved, to ask questions. You know, it's very rare that you could, you know, if you come at it from a positive position, if you come at it from an authentic curiosity or a genuine unknowing of kind of the right thing to say or the right thing to ask, just ask questions, approach, you know, come to the ERG, right? So we talked about ERGs right at the start. I think that's a really good first step for allies to get involved in the community. You can come to an ERG, you can listen to the conversations that are happening, you can listen to the topics that are being discussed. And then you will, you know, through that, start to develop an understanding of what is acceptable, what's not acceptable. You will start to understand, get a better understanding of kind of the lived experience of, you know, LGBTQ plus people. So for me, it's about getting involved because, you know, when we host our ERG meetings, our LGBTQ plus ERG meetings at InfoSum, I love that there are allies that turn up and there are allies that turn up on a regular basis to explore topics, to educate themselves. They don't always contribute to the conversation, and that's fine because they are often there to simply listen and to educate themselves. So that would be my advice. You know, listen to your LGBTQ plus colleagues, listen to your LGBTQ plus people within your network, and just kind of get involved.
And what are some challenges or pitfalls that one might face when addressing LGBTQ issues, and how can they navigate these challenges effectively?
Yeah, I think the first pitfall any organization can fall into or face is something that's just come up a bunch while we've had this conversation, which is your internal processes and procedures. You know, you need to get your internal house in order first to avoid that kind of obvious pitfall. And a good way to test it, I think, is to ask yourself, you know, if you're thinking, for example, of running an LGBTQ plus focused campaign, would the LGBTQ plus employees within your organization feel that addressing an LGBTQ plus issue reflects the internal nature of your organization? And if the answer is no, you're probably not ready to kind of go external, right? Because rainbow washing is very much a thing, and the community will quickly see through what you might call surface level gestures, like changing your logo to the pride colors at Pride, without real commitment. So first and foremost, you've got to get your internal house in order. Secondly, something which you just touched on, we were just touching on, which is make sure you're truly educated as a business and aware of the issues you're going to try and tackle, so you don't get caught off guard or ignorant to what it is that you're talking about. And then the third and final thing, and it's kind of an unfortunate but honest thing, is to prepare for backlash, because it's sad, but supporting the LGBTQ plus community has somehow become a controversial thing, especially around trans and non-binary members of our community. But, you know, a lot of the arguments we're now hearing about our trans community and our non-binary community and even our drag queens, they were used the same arguments for the gay community 2 or 3 decades ago, right? And now the majority of society is recognizes how unfounded and misguided those homophobic views were. And I truly think there will come a day, and I hope it's sooner rather than later, that people will look back at the way we are kind of currently treating our trans and non-binary community and know that they're on the wrong side of history. But for now, we are still seeing backlash to campaigns. We saw it a lot in 2023. And I think what you saw a lot in 2023 was organizations that hadn't clearly planned for what they would do if there was backlash. And they were kind of simply jumping on a trend. And that's potentially why we also saw then those brands backtracking on those campaigns, which I think is the biggest pitfall any company can fall into, which is backtracking. If you backtrack on your campaign, you know, not only do you empower and embolden a small, again, I have to believe it's a small vocal minority furiously tweeting from their phones, but you also upset and ostracize and lose the custom of your LGBTQ plus community and its allies. So backtracking is kind of a lose-lose situation for any brand. And I find it interesting because when you look at the brands in 2023 specifically that suffered, if that's the right word, for their LGBTQ plus campaigns, it was those that backtracked and didn't stand by their campaigns, that didn't stand by the LGBTQ plus community. And to be clear, it's not, in my opinion anyway, it's not because they ran an LGBTQ plus campaign. They suffered negative consequences because they ran an LGBTQ plus campaign and then backtracked. So to avoid that mistake and avoid backtracking, you have to be prepared for the backlash and know how you're going to respond and know that you're then going to be in a much better place. And simply put, part of that preparation just has to be knowing, and it's a commitment at all levels of your business to stand by the LGBTQ plus campaign and stand by the LGBTQ plus campaign and the community that you're targeting with that.
Do you think that's part of the process of even creating the campaign to go through the steps of what would happen if there was a backlash? Do you think that's part of the creative or the actual creation process?
I think it has to be. I think you have to have a real clear plan in place to say when we, you know, let's say it's a social media campaign, when we post this to Instagram or to Twitter/X, what is our response? What is our reaction, if anything, to any negative backlash? And I would hope that your response is that you are going to stand by your campaign. It's what we've seen fantastic brands like Oreo do in the past. Is, you know, they're very clear and they say, we feel that this campaign is very in keeping with our brand values and we're going to continue to stand by the LGBTQ plus community. So I think you're 100% right. I think planning for the backlash until we see less of it just has to be kind of a default part of that campaign planning.
And for those who are listening and are evaluating campaigns that talk to the LGBT community or include the LGBT community, in your experience, have there been any outside resources or nonprofits that have been helpful in creation of campaigns?
Yes, there's a fantastic organization actually that was, they spoke at, their CEO Tamara Littleton spoke at our the InfoSum event last year, the Social Element. They're involved in a lot of, they're an agency and they're involved in a lot of campaigns and they've done a lot of work around how to best respond and how to best react to any negative backlash. So that's just one organization off the top of my head that's done some fantastic work in this space.
And that's called Social Element?
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you for sharing that. And Ben, as we wrap up, you talked about getting your internal house in order. What are two things that you hope everyone listening today will do as a next step to foster a culture of inclusivity as it relates to the LGBTQ plus community? And essentially to get their internal house in order.
So I think the first thing any organization should do if they are, you know, if they're looking at the LGBTQ plus community is look at your brand values. You know, we at InfoSum have set brand values and it's really explicit. We have four brand values and one of them is being people first and the other is leveling the playing field. So both of those values ensure that we are always focused on building an inclusive environment that empowers every member of our team to come to work and be the best version of themselves every time. So I think the first thing is to look at your brand values. And then I think the second thing is you have to look at your leadership and you have to look at your organization and say, you know, are we going to commit ourselves to creating a diverse and inclusive workplace environment, right? You need everyone from the top down to be invested in this. If your CEO isn't invested in diversity, equity, and inclusion, it can't really take hold in your company. You know, again, at InfoSum, we're incredibly lucky. We're incredibly fortunate. We're led by Brian Lesser, who's our CEO, and he worked with me on setting those initial brand values, and he takes a proactive role in all of our ERGs. So when you have a CEO that's that visible and that invested in equality and inclusivity, it spreads across your organization. So I would say it's check your brand values, make sure that actually supporting the LGBTQ plus community is part of those brand values. And then look at your organizational structure, look at your organizational makeup, establish an ERG and focus on that first and foremost before you even think about kind of stepping externally.
Thank you so much, Ben. It's been a pleasure talking to you and hearing your point of view and experience.
No, thank you so much for having me on here and tackling such an important topic. It's been brilliant.